Hey everybody, welcome to the Ground Effect Podcast, where we dive into the heart of Formula One, bringing you the latest news, insider analysis, and sharing our thoughts on the motorsport we love. So come and join us, G and Mick, as we look forward to what promises to be an exciting 2025 Formula One season.
Did the mandatory two-stop work? And is Lando Norris back in the hunt? Is he the real deal for the rest of 2025? Tell me, dissect the weekend. Gee, man, what'd you make of the weekend as a whole?
Up until Saturday, pretty exciting. Sunday, I don't know. I don't think that two-stop really worked. It created, I don't know, there was something about it. It just felt messy and it felt, scrappy, a bit confusing as well. Obviously, we had some teams backing up to help their teammates, which was obviously well within the rules, but from a racing spectacle, I don't think it's really the right way to go about racing. But on another note, to your second question, Lando Norris, is he the real deal? Well, I think this weekend is one. If he goes on and wins the championship, this is definitely the turning point. This is what he'll look back on as the stepping stone.
It took a mega lap in qualifying. It took a track record to beat Charles for pole. And then, you know, we knew basically from that point on, if he got into turn one, he was going to be a good chance at winning the race. Did the two-stop work? No, I don't think so. If you're an average Joe who doesn't really understand, like if you're just tuning in for the first time to watch the race, man, there was so much going on and it was kind of, even for me, I got a little bit like far up and there's a lot going on here. Like this is a bit confusing. Is Norris the real deal? We said if he could get Saturday right, we might see a switch for the rest of the season. And I think, what is he like, 3 points now behind Oscar? So now it'll be interesting to see how Oscar reacts. Now going to Barcelona, a bit more of a traditional circuit. So definitely getting spicy at the top now. Like Norris definitely needed this weekend.
Just going back to the two-stopper, how do you think that they, if they do it again, what do you think they could bring in to perhaps make it a little bit less confusing, but at the same time, spice it up perhaps a bit more? Because there was, like, you're right. I mean, I saw Ted Kravitz, he was just talking about how a lot of people in the crowd were confused with Verstappen pitting right at the end. Like, what are you doing, mate? You're winning the race. Why are you having to come in? So, yeah, there was a lot of confusion around it. Granted, we do know a lot of people that go to some of these Formula One events that they're quite new to the sport, but also, you know, people that are just there for, obviously, the party and mixing and for the entertainment, of course. But what do you think they could have done differently?
I don't know. It's a hard one because it's like when you look at the results, we literally went through all that for the top 10 to basically finish where they started, right? Which is what happens generally anyway. During the coverage, someone made a comment like maybe you could do, they had to take the first pit stop in the first 20 or 30 laps.
Yeah, so create basically like a pit stop window.
Yeah, exactly. Create that pit stop window and then maybe do the same again with the second one or leave the second one open. It was well played by some teams. Long day for a lot of others. But yeah, I mean, for those first 20, 30 laps, I was a bit like, whoa, there's a fair bit going on. When we got that virtual safety car, I thought, right, this is it. Everyone's just going to pile into the pits. And nobody did, obviously, because that was lap one. You know, everyone was talking, maybe if there's a safety car or a virtual safety car in those first couple of laps, that the whole field would come in and get rid of that first stop, which didn't eventuate. But yeah, like, I mean, we went through all that for literally the top, the top 10 to finish where they qualified. So I'm not too sure. I'm sure they'll tweak it. I don't think that they should get rid of it just yet. It's like everything, right? The first one's always a learning exercise. Have another crack at it before we dismiss it completely, because we do need to do something because it is Monaco and the cars are just way too big. And I think even Max said, like, at the moment, a Formula One car would struggle to overtake an F2 car. They need to keep looking at it, but there's not much else really they can do, like, because you're not going to improve the racing. You can't improve the racing around there.
Yeah, well, nothing's going to change for 2026. So I agree with you. I think it's just refining, perhaps with a pit stop window. That's probably really the only way out of it. Otherwise, we go to something extreme. And I know I bring it up a lot, the Bernie Ecclestone method of sprinklers on the track, which clearly ain't going to happen.
Yeah, like literally that's what you would need to spice up the racing.
But hey, look, Saturday was awesome. I mean, that's the thing. You know, we did get a fantastic Saturday. In fact, we got a great Friday as well. Like, there was plenty of action, a few moments, big moments of drivers making mistakes, pushing the limits. So that was always good to see. We always knew Saturday was going to be the most important qualifying session of the year. We got an exciting one and okay, we got a bit of a lackluster race, but it had potential there. But in the end, hey, look, I'm happy. Liam Lawson got a point, but we'll get onto that a little bit later. But going back to McLaren, I mean, big bag of points from a constructor's point of view. They're just extending that lead. It's theirs to lose now. Going back to Lando, yeah, I think this is a massive step forward. Piastri, on the other hand, I think he, the post-race interview, he was disappointed. It was a scrappy weekend overall. He never really quite got that same sort of level of cleanliness like Lando had. Like, Lando had a pretty flawless weekend. It was really impressive. I think for Piastri's sake, he's doing what he needs to do. We've talked about it. If you have a bad weekend or an average weekend, you still got to pick up a big, dirty bag of points, and that's what he did.
Like you said, this could be the defining moment in his championship. Needed that track record in qualifying to beat Charles because Charles was on fire. Oscar just didn't quite seem to have the number of Lando. Lando just seemed to have a little bit more in hand all throughout the weekend, practice, qualifying, and in the race. And he got a little bit unlucky in the race there with his first stop. I think he pitted on lap 20 to get off the mediums, but he had a slow pit stop with the, I think it was the right rear, because he was looking to undercut Charles and then he had the slow stop and then that just didn't eventuate. So pretty well stuck for third. But like you said, the main thing is he got third and he got the points. Who knows? That third place could be the difference between winning and losing the championship come Abu Dhabi in December.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be so close between those two. I think it'll just come down to pure consistency. Whoever has better consistency throughout the whole year, the damage limitation, so to speak, that's where it's going to be the big thing, I think, throughout the whole season. Now, Ferrari, I mean, Leclerc had a blistering weekend. He was fastest in all the practice sessions. I thought he was actually going to nail the pole at his home track, obviously to be pipped by Lando. Lewis, on the other hand, qualified fourth, unfortunately had the impeding penalty, which gave him a three-place penalty, so he started P7. Now, from a racing perspective, I mean, Leclerc, what could he really have done differently? Is there anything that Ferrari could have thrown? Any curveballs? There really wasn't much they could do.
Really, he came second on Saturday, and, mate, it was not much in it. Yeah, I mean, he pitted at what? His first stop was a couple of laps later than Norris in that first stint. So, I mean, Max backed him up at the end, made it sort of interesting. But again, like, there was nowhere really he could pass, because the only two places you probably could have passed, Lando made sure he got the exit. If you don't make a mistake in that final corner or coming into the tunnel, you've got no hope. So second was the best he could do. Hamilton, on the other hand, yeah, like you said, unlucky he got that penalty, because you would say it wasn't really a driver error. He just got poor communication from his engineer. But overall, good strategy by Ferrari to get Lewis in when they did. Got him in early and he managed to jump Alonso and Hadjar at that point. And then from then he was just never headed and didn't quite have the pace of the top four, and just got himself into a position where he had that free pit stop over Hadjar in the end there. After the race in Imola, like, again, they've obviously unlocked something. I think they were using last year's rear wing this weekend, so maybe they should just scrap this car and run last year's car. Why not? You know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, they seem to have closed that gap.
And obviously the test for them will be Barcelona next race. And then that's where we'll see the ramifications of if their upgrades have really bought something meaningful.
Right. Well, they're bringing the suspension upgrade into Barcelona, which is the big one. They've held back on the aero upgrades to focus on the rear of the car. After the next weekend, we'll see if they've really made a big step forward or they are where they are and it's time to look at 2026.
Well, from a Constructors' Championship, not a bad haul of points for them, considering where Red Bull stood with just the one driver in the top 10, and Mercedes, which we'll get to, which is probably one of the most horrific weekends that they've had in a very long time. Onto Red Bull, Verstappen, really just a one-man show over there at the moment. P4, wasn't much he could do. Again, ran him long and, you know, with a few laps left, he was obviously backing them up a little bit, perhaps hoping that they'll sort of, you know, second and third would trip over themselves, and obviously hoping for a red flag situation. But otherwise, podium was always going to be a tough gig. Started from fifth, didn't he, on the grid? No, fourth, because he got elevated because of Hamilton, yeah. So, I mean, again, from a championship perspective, damage limitation, pick up as many points as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, they left him out there. Like, they did what they could do. Like, they left him out there as long as they could, just in case of a red flag or a safety car, which, you know, never eventuated. So we kind of thought they would probably struggle around here with the low speed. You know, they struggled on the Friday, came back, they managed to find something on the Saturday, and he was looking half decent. But when they turned the wick up, that Red Bull was just a little bit off still. Started from fourth, finished fourth, couldn't do much better than that.
Let's talk about poor old Yuki on the other side of the garage. Now, yeah, tough. I mean, scrappy weekend last week, and Imola comes into Monaco, really needed to nail the Saturday, didn't do that. So he didn't get through Q3. Both RBs got through to Q3. So obviously that's drums. We know it's all about Saturday, didn't get it done. So you can't really judge him on the race because, I mean, it was a poor result. Finishing P17, caught up in traffic, bit of a bonkers strategy as well. He was really in no man's land.
Okay, yes, you can't look at the race result, but you can look at Saturday. You know, like, regardless if he was running a different front nose to Max, well, that's your own fault because you had the accident in Imola. Use that to show that, no, it's all good. I don't need to have the same. I can get the job done. And yeah, he just didn't get it done. And then, yeah, in the race, what, pitted on lap one after Bortoleto went into the barriers there. And then, yeah, just stuck in traffic. Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't produce something next weekend, you know, you look at Hadjar, man. He's banging down the door, right?
Tsunoda was the only driver. He did start on softs. So he was the only one on softs. So yeah, bit of a alternative strategy that they obviously ran with him. Look, the gap between him and Max hasn't really improved that much. If Max is going to win this championship this year, the Drivers' Championship, he needs a driver that's pulling away points off the rivals. So, I mean, if Max actually goes ahead and wins this championship with not much help from, you know, the other side of the garage, I'd say it's like, that's an immense effort because he's got no rear gunner because you can't run a strategy. It's so hard to run a strategy around one car when your rivals got two cars up there. We've seen teams in the past, you know, go back to, say, Hamilton and Bottas. Bottas played that two-driver role to perfection. It was always there or thereabouts. It always gave Mercedes options and strategy, you know, to make different strategy calls throughout the race. He took points away from the rivals. That's what Max needs. And I just don't know. I just don't know if Yuki's going to be able to close that performance gap.
No, look, I've already said it. I think he's gone. Summer break, Hadjar's going to step up. Like you said, you know, Max has already won the championship. He had Sergio, who wasn't much help last year. He's done it before, but you just, like you said, when it's one driver fighting against two cars, you can't afford to take bigger risks on the strategy because you're not getting the help from the second car, right?
He'll eke a few more wins out. He'll be sort of in the mix near the end of the season, but I just think he needed a teammate that was able to help mix strategies up and take away points.
He's just going to be a thorn in the side of McLaren all year long. He's going to be probably one of the biggest deciding factors on who wins the championship out of the McLaren drivers, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. He's going to be the guy that takes away the points. Going back to Yuki, because you think he's gone, you're talking about summer break. So we've got Barcelona coming up. So you reckon by then, if there's no performance gain, you reckon poor old Yuki's gone? And do you think he gets a demotion or he's actually gone and then they promote Lindblad? I mean, it depends also on, obviously, the Honda. Like, we know there's a Honda tie-up there with Yuki. It'll be interesting to see sort of how that dynamic work because of, yeah, we know that they're using a different powertrain from next year, but I think there's a lot of tie-ups still with Honda, right, from a tech side.
Red Bull have bought the IP from Honda, and then they'll have a technical tie-up with Ford until Ford bring in an engine themselves. Yeah, that's a good question. If Hadjar keeps having weekends like he's having, you can't ignore that, right? And yes, Yuki's been given, you know, the time by Marco, but we've seen how ruthless they can be. They're going to get to a point where they're like, bro, you're not doing what we need you to do. Maybe put Tsunoda back into RB for the rest of the season. And then in 2026, then you bring Lindblad in.
It's a real tricky one because obviously we don't really know what Max is doing if he's sticking around. I mean, he's saying he's going to stick around because you kind of think like this, or at least this is how I'm sort of thinking. If they are to get rid of Tsunoda after the summer break, there's no point putting them back in the RB seat unless there's some sort of Honda agreement because he's a five-year driver and they know what he can do and what he can't do. Lawson was a little bit different because I think they still see him that he has a future. I mean, he's, you know, he hasn't even had a full season yet. So I still feel like, okay, you demote him, but he can rebuild. And I think they really want to take a look at Lindblad. And I think what better time to do it than just say, look, mate, you've got to the end of the season. don't stress, get the experience in behind you, give it a crack. And then even if Hadjar doesn't work from the Red Bull perspective, I don't think they'd leave him out in the cold, and they'd probably just do something similar to what they did with Liam, because I still feel he's got a bit of a ceiling on him.
You look at Hadjar and Lawson, right? They're Red Bull young drivers, right? They've been in the Red Bull program a long time. Yes, Yuki has been in that Red Bull pool, but I think without the Honda tie-up, he wouldn't have even got a look in. Be interesting to see what happens. I still think musical chairs in the summer break.
Well, let's hope that Yuki can bounce back and find a bit of performance, because, you know, like, he's a likable dude. He's fun to have around in the sport. It's just, it's a tricky one, because, I mean, I'm starting to sense the frustration now with Yuki, you know, and the radio messages and stuff. You know, there's that tipping point. Confidence starts taking a hit. It's going to be tough from here on out. Yeah, so moving on to Racing Bulls, a great result for them. Probably the best result of the season. Double points there. Obviously, I'm massively stoked for Liam, just getting the, you know, he's finally out of that donut club. He needed that performance. It was like, from Liam's perspective, clean weekend, on the pace, pretty much through all the practice sessions. Hadjar on the other side, excellent weekend. Yes, it was scrappy, but you can kind of get away with it when you're a rookie, particularly when you can bounce back and put a performance in, which he did, because, you know, he had a couple of offs in through practice sessions, both into Q3. Yeah, I mean, they're walking away super happy.
Well, for a start, you got career best finishes from both drivers, 6 and 8. Hadjar, man, like you said, just scrappy, but when he needed to, he showed he's got that mental resilience to bounce back and just get the job done. The other side of the garage, Lawson, man, that's probably in his best weekend all season. He's got a bit of history around here. He had a win in 2020 or 2021 in a F2 race, but then I think was later disqualified, but did what he needed to do. Played an awesome team game with Hadjar.
Initially, when that all started to happen, I was like, oh my God. I'm like, Lawson's got a problem with the car, because I'm watching the timings and I'm watching his lap times, you know, drop off. And I'm like, I'm watching the gap further and further away from Ocon. And I'm thinking to myself, nah, this can't be right. Like, he's got a problem. And then it sort of switched on. Oh, of course, you know, he's building that massive gap for Hadjar to obviously make a pit stop and come into the gap he's creating. So obviously, from a racing perspective, purist perspective, it was like horrible.
Once you figured out what was actually going on, because even me, man, like, what, he ran 31 laps on that first stint, and I'm like, man, why is he staying out so long? What's he doing? Once you sort of got your head around it, what was happening and how it was playing out, you're like, oh, okay, cool. Basically, where you qualified is where you finished anyway. So, I mean, they'll be super happy, man. That's a massive bag of points this weekend. That's the weekend he needed, right? From now, he can build, man. He finally, things sort of went his way. Clean weekend, no dramas, had a bit of luck. Didn't get caught up in any mess, kept it off the walls, on pace with Hadjar basically all weekend. Like, that's mentally, that's really good for him.
Now on to Williams, because in a way they pulled off a similar strategy to what the Racing Bulls did with a driver backing up, allowing another driver to fall into the gap after a pit stop. And we saw that with Albon and Sainz. Now they finished P9, P10, wasn't it? Which wasn't too bad, because, I mean, they qualified, Albon was in 10th, Sainz qualified 11th. We thought it was a little bit disappointing for Williams from that point of view, because we expected a little bit more performance out of them, a little bit higher up the grid, of course. But, I mean, again, you know, double points finish, yes, 9 and 10, not the best haul, but considering, again, damage limitation, James Vowles came on the radio and explained that the way that it panned out with backing traffic up, it wasn't something that he personally liked. But obviously makes sense, right?
Most of the drivers had that same opinion. Like, it's not how they want to go racing. Team first. In order for them to get those double points, that's what needed to be done. And I mean, Albon, when they flipped it and Albon had to slow the pack up for Sainz, whew, I mean, man, he was slow. How many times did Russell nearly run up his backside? You know, at least they'll still come away with something. It wasn't a fruitless weekend. Like you said, we were disappointed with their performance in qualifying. We were definitely expecting more out of them. To get what they did, they've got to be relatively happy.
Yeah, and, you know, Carlos Sainz playing the ultimate team game there, giving the place back to Albon after all that strategy. So good to see that they're working together, and there didn't seem to be any sort of hard feelings after the race or anything like that.
Well, and especially in a circuit like here, like, you do have to give preference to whoever starts higher on the grid. Unfortunately. So, you know, if Sainz qualified ahead of Albon, it would have, the roles would have been reversed.
Now, let's move on to Haas because, you know, we knew it was going to happen. We talked about the pendulum team. Last week was just a complete write-off. Come to Monaco and Ocon puts on a great performance. I think it was a P8 qualifying, if I remember correctly. Poor old Bearman has an affinity for red flags at the moment and was just hit. Destroyed his weekend with that 10-place grid penalty with not obeying the red flags during qualifying. But look, I mean, a P7 finish for Ocon in the end. Good haul of points there for Haas, considering last week's absolute schmozzle.
Yeah, well, I mean, we didn't know whether, yeah, they were going to turn up and be last or second last. And Ocon's just slowly ticking away. He's starting to get a bit of a handle on that car, doing what we kind of expected him to do, which was, you know, be that lead guy. On the other side of the garage, Bearman, the red flags, he has an affinity with them at the moment, so a bit unlucky there. Solid race, bounced back, what, to P12? And considering he was one of the first, he stopped on lap one as well with the virtual safety car, so to come back to P12, I mean, was a pretty solid drive. Was it a performance gain of sorts? Probably not, but I mean, they'll be happy. Good points.
Now, let's, you know what? Let's do a little bit of promotion here because, you know, we do grind down steak.
We do kick them while they're down.
Oh, we kick them, mate. We kick. 100%. Wasn't a bad performance on Saturday. Nico nabbing 13th on the grid. Bortoleto, you know, not too bad at the 16th. From a race perspective, you know, not a lot that they could really do from those positions, of course, except to gamble a little bit. Bortoleto finished 14th and Hülkenberg in 16th.
Saturday, definitely the luck. They look like they've made a good step forward and closing that gap to the midfield. Yeah, it's just one of those races. I mean, there's not much they could have done, right? Nothing really worked for them race-wise.
When you're sort of, I guess, P11, P12 onwards to the back, you're just going for the ultimate gamble. You're just going to do something completely left field and hope for the best with perhaps a virtual safety car, red flag, safety car, etc. So nothing really fell their way.
But even then, they didn't really take a massive gamble on anything, right? They didn't seem to take a massive risk in trying to get themselves up the field. So when you look at, you know, their tyre strategies, it was they just sort of went through the motions there.
Yeah, let's move on to Aston because the unluckiest driver in the world, he's onto something because mechanical failure or something going on there with the power unit by the looks of it, bit of smoke coming out of the car. Poor old Fernando, he was in for points today. The guy is still sitting on zero, worst start to his career over his multiple seasons. Can't catch a trick at the moment. Stroll, on the other hand, just in La La Land, scrappy weekend. We saw him have the issue with Leclerc and the practice sessions, copped a grid penalty. He just hasn't really featured at all. But Alonso, I mean, there was all right pace in that Aston Martin, and we kind of expected it because they made a little bit of a jump last week, and then they had Newey sidelined today, the Air Whisperer. That just disappointed. That points in the bag.
And you're starting to hear it in Alonso's radio messages. Like, I think he was told to push. And did you hear him? I can't push. Like, so that frustrating is starting to creep back in. And that's coming from having a solid Saturday, right? Like you said, they seem to have made a jump in performance. They finished Saturday and they're like, we're good to go. There's no reason why we can't score good points. Sunday comes and it just falls apart. From Alonso's side of the garage, like he's starting to get really frustrated. 2026 can't come fast enough for him, I don't think.
Yeah, true. You know, I think out of most of the teams, I think Aston's going to be really interesting come Barcelona because we did see a jump in performance in Imola. I think they were relatively pacey here. Stroll obviously was nowhere, but Alonso showed some pace. So I'm kind of interested to see how they go next week in Barcelona, and perhaps that's where Alonso can, you know, grab some points. Alpine, just nowhere the whole weekend. And then obviously the race. I mean, Gasly didn't even finish, had the contact with Tsunoda coming out of the tunnel, managed to drive the car all the way around back to the pit lane. Kind of surprised that no one got a puncture from all the debris that was scattered around the track. Colapinto, obviously, that's where a lot of eyes are at the moment. Look, he did what he had to do, stay out of trouble. Look, I mean, he was getting in people's way in the practice sessions, etc. Max was bit angry with them at some point there. But, you know, we talked about Imola being scrappy, massive shunt. To come into Monaco, don't worry about so much the performance and where you are to Gasly. Just clean weekend. He's done that.
Came into this weekend like majorly on the back foot. You know, your second race back in the seat of a Formula One car, you're bouncing off the walls in Monaco. Like, that's hard, man. That's got to be hard. Like, it's got to be tough. And, you know, you're not comfortable in the car your second weekend. Yeah. So for him to come out, what, P13, for him will be a good mental boost. Gasly, man, that was a, you know, that could have been a lot worse. It looked like as he came out of the tunnel, and then as soon as he got on the brakes, you could see the hands on the wheel were like, he was struggling to pull it up and just couldn't get it stopped in time. And they've got a fair bit of work to do. So a lot of weight on Gasly's shoulders at the moment, and he's struggling because that car's not where it needs to be.
He needs to lead the team, right? He needs to be picking up points regularly. He needs to be basically leading from the front. So yeah, I mean, he can do it. We know how good he is, showing glimpses, but it just seems to be a bit of scrappiness coming into some of his race weekends, unfortunately. Let's do it. Wooden Spooners, from a performance point of view, this weekend. It doesn't happen very often, granted. I can't even remember the last time that two Mercedes were basically knocked out of Q3. To have two Mercedes basically nowhere near looking like picking up some points. So we had George Russell, Kimi Antonelli, qualifying 14th and 15th. Obviously, Kimi brought out the red flag in Q2, I think it was. Or was it Q1? Q1, yeah. Yeah, because he was quick enough to get into Q2, but unfortunately couldn't partake because he caused some work for the mechanics down there at Mercedes. Look, Russell, not a bad recovery drive. P11, just outside the points there. Antonelli, back in P18, basically last of the runners. We know that they're a better team than that.
Yeah, of course. They just lost their weekend on Saturday. Put it down to a rookie mistake from Antonelli, pushing just that little bit too hard. I mean, he only just kissed that. So it wasn't much. He'll learn from that. He'll move on. Like I think Toto said, like, when we're starting from where we're starting, we may as well just run right to the end and change late. Because if we do and nothing happens, we're getting no points anyway. So it's not going to make too much of a difference.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't, basically.
Well, yeah, exactly. You saw when Russell was following Albon, the bottom of the tunnel there, and basically swerved and cut the chicane and was just like, nah, I'm taking the penalty. Well, in that situation, normally you would be like a 5 second or a 10 second penalty. The worst thing is he probably shouldn't have said, I'll just take the penalty, because then the stewards turned around and gave him a drive through. He still drove relatively well to finish in 11th. And then Kimi was just, I mean, his strategy, man, what, ran 70 laps on that one set of tires. They were sitting in the engineer's office on Saturday night, smoking the hopium. Sit out here and wait and hope. You know, their strategy was based on hope because they knew there's not much you can do really, yeah, to try and get anything out of that after. But again, they weren't really there on Friday either. So they definitely struggled this weekend. You know, we were expecting a little bit cooler temperatures, but with the hotter track temperatures, they just struggle. They struggle for some reason, and that's an underlying issue with that car. We keep saying that car's been pretty consistent, but we've seen over the last two weekends that consistency start to drop off.
Yeah, well, I mean, Barcelona will be a complete different kettle of fish with, you know, it's obviously a massive difference to the type of track that Monaco is. So, yeah, I think they'll be back in the mix next week.
Yeah, well, you would imagine a more traditional circuit. Although, in saying that, you're probably going to get similar temperatures and similar conditions.
Probably hotter. I'd say hotter.
Well, if it's going to be hotter, you'd say they're going to struggle.
But I mean, they'll struggle, but they're still top 10 worthy, of course.
Oh, man. They're still, at worst, the fourth best team. At worst. At the moment, you would say they're still the third best, right? Behind McLaren and Red Bull. Yeah, they were just off all weekend. They're lacking something and they've got to try and unlock it.
Well, I mean, that pretty much wraps up all the teams. We're going to hear a lot about this two-stop mandatory business over the next couple of days. Everyone's going to throw on their opinion into the ring, no doubt. I'm sure there'll be some good recommendations on how they could spice it up, still using a two-stopper. Let's talk about your driver of the weekend. Not necessarily the race, but of the weekend. Who outperformed? You know, you can have, obviously, the main performer, but was there someone that sort of outperforms and did well?
Driver of the weekend, Lawson, has to be, right? We've said he just needs a clean week. He finally got a clean weekend. Look what he can do. We know what he can do. On pace with Hadjar all weekend. Didn't make a mistake compared to Hadjar. It's just Hadjar's come Saturday, just got that, you know, maybe that little bit. But from a weekend overall, I'm going to give it to Lawson for me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, for me, it's like Lando, obviously, from the point of under pressure, a lot of people are saying that he bottles it, particularly on a Saturday. He was flawless, got the pole, got the job done. So from that perspective, obviously, big one for Lando. Everywhere else, I would say Lawson as well. Just more because, yes, Hadjar finished ahead, but obviously there's a lot of praise around Hadjar at the moment. There's been a lot of pressure on Lawson. Even just last week, there were, you know, some stories coming out that basically he may get chopped within the season, like very soon. And I think, yeah, from that perspective, under pressure, absolutely flawless weekend, career best finish. Yeah, for me, it was Liam Lawson. And I'm really happy to say that.
Yeah, finally. It's finally nice to say it. So that's our weekend wrap up. We've got Barcelona next week. So we'll be doing a weekend preview on that one. So thanks for joining us. Make sure you like and subscribe, and we'll catch you in the next one. Laters.